This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Nick Caserio last week in his pre-draft press conference, he was feeling it a little bit, man. He was not ready to take any flowers from anybody on how the offseason has gone so far. You know, people were trying, man. Like, here are your flowers, Nick. Like, you signed a lot of big names. Hey, Stefon Diggs might be a diva. Those aren't necessarily flowers, but, you know, just looking for answers.
Right.
Here's a compilation of press conference pre-draft Nick Caserio from late last week.
You know, I'm sure we'll get some questions here about the offseason and some of the things that we've done. I mean, frankly, it's kind of laughable. I mean, it's so early. I mean, we haven't done anything. Yeah, I think anything that's said outside the building is just noise. Draft grades, right? I mean, it's the most ridiculous concept that I've ever heard of. We can talk about all we want about what's going on, what the expectation is. Quite frankly, it doesn't really matter. We're not for everybody. Everybody's not for us, and that's okay. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really know what that means. I mean, what, Devin Singletary, was that not like a big enough name last year, I guess? Yeah, number one, I don't even know what that definition means. So if someone can define that for me. Excited to have stuff here, and, you know, when he gets here, I mean, certainly he's, you know, he'll be available, you know, maybe ample time for you all to visit with him. So, like, we're not, you know, sign a free agent, you know, bring a jersey up here and, like, do a big powwow. Like, that's not how we operate. Like, we don't believe in that.
Is there another way that we're supposed to do it?
No, I'm asking.
We're not trying to be difficult. I know that's what everybody thinks. I'm sure you guys can have some fun with that next week. So, all right,
thanks.
Next week is this week, and we're having some fun with it with Nick Caserio. Seth, I'm looking right now. I just Googled report cards, 2023 NFL draft, and I put April 2023 so that they're from, you know, right after the draft. All the ones that Nick said, and I don't disagree with him. Like, yeah, like doing a report card as if it's some sort of gospel as to how these guys are going to play out. Like, I don't know that people necessarily read them that way. I think it's more of a report card. Like, okay, did their draft make sense? You know, did they attack needs? Did they do those things? I just pulled up three of them here. The AP, Texans, A+.
Ooh,
yeah. Yahoo, Texans, yeah. A-.
Yeah.
The Athletic, Texans, A.
Yeah.
It appeared to have played out that way. They got those right.
They got them right. Well, we'll see. Give it 3 years. You got to give it 3 years. This is always there's so many negative draft grades that end up being awesome 3 years later. There's so many ones that either look awesome on draft night that end up being horrible drafts. So I'm only surprised that Caserio got so agitated about it in this press conference, because it's something that he's always known as stupid and ridiculous about. The silly season is what he called it last year. I just do wonder if maybe there was one point in the press conference, Sean, where he alluded to the fact that they'd had their top 30 visits with some people they wanted to meet with got them in the building, and then some that they visited with that weren't even in the building. I think that was a joke about, like, there must have been some bad reporting on guys who visited there and who didn't actually. That's a kind of news report that actually does affect the GM's job and can become a pain in the butt. Because if the NFL sees that and they're like, wait a second, you told us that this was your top 30. Did you have more than you were supposed to? And then all of a sudden you got to answer to, like, this false report of somebody visiting your organization, even though like that would have been a violation. Mm-hmm. So, like, that part of it, I wonder. He didn't look particularly agitated when he brought that up, but I wonder if that was one of the things that put him over the edge into just being publicly so dismissive of all the nonsense.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Because his opening his opening statement, which was like 6 minutes long,
yeah,
had like three of the like your montage you put together there. I'm assuming had like eight different cuts in it, right? It was
there
a combination.
There were quite a few, and at least a couple of them came from that opening montage.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That's where he said it was just like silly or stupid or whatever.
Yes, yeah,
like all of the attention they've been getting when, frankly, they haven't done anything yet.
Yeah,
other than sign a few people.
I think he chose violence, man. I don't think anything triggered him. I think he showed up ready to fight.
Right. No, I'm saying that scenario is what had him in that mood. Yeah, like that scenario.
The reporting from before. I got
you. He had mentioned that top 30 about the people who were supposed in the building who weren't even in the building. That was one of the things he brought up in that opening part as
got
well.
Got you. Yeah, it was. I was misinterpreting. There was a question somebody was asking about that set him off. So.
Oh, yeah. No. He just brought that up on his own.
Yeah. No, he came in ready to go.
He did. He gave some good information. One of them was Chris Ballard does this too. I watched him this weekend. Chris Ballard will give you a few little nuggets that are interesting. But I was glad that he pointed this out, that the top 30 visits, it's a misnomer in that it's not like those are your top 30 dudes. I think sometimes people see that a player visited a team on a top 30 visit, and they think that means that that team shows a favoritism to that player.
Every pundit has him as a fifth rounder. What's going on?
Right, yeah. And Nick just flat out said that, no, sometimes you're bringing him in to get one last look, and as he's on the way out, you're like, yeah, definitely not this guy.
Yeah,
it's... You might want to be sure that you didn't like this guy. Which I'd love. I would love it. I would love to know those ones. I would love to be able to watch from afar if I knew that a guy was in specifically because they didn't like him, but they wanted to be sure that he was a turd. Like, what does this guy do to confirm that on his visit?
Well,
it must be amazing.
What does the conversation look like afterwards? You know what I mean? Like, between Nick and D'Amico. Like, they go back to one of their offices and they're like, jeez.
That's even worse than I thought.
So it's really bad. Yeah.
That is, you know what? That's one thing I was thinking about. I had a long drive and I was thinking about all this random draft stuff that, you know, rethinking where sometimes sometimes I'm critical of the pre-draft interviews because, like, in any job search, like, people value their own ability to interview way more than typically they should. And, like, they make a lot of assumptions about the value of an interview and everything. I will say, in the NFL, there are a lot of instances in which there's prospects that are just bad dudes, or there are just giant red flags that might not come up until you're talking to them and you realize, like, oh, this guy just cannot disguise it. You know, like, this guy just can't even hide what a turd he is.
Yeah.
Like, his priorities are all out of whack. So I think there is value in that.
Texter points this out, weirdly saying, quote, they don't believe in the intro presser versus doing it with Hunter, Danielle Hunter, a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Was weird, LOL. We acknowledged that earlier in the show. Yeah, that was strange. We joked that Nick, if there was a follow-up to that with someone bringing up Danielle Hunter, Nick's correct answer would have been, yeah, starting now we don't do the Big Dog and Pony show. Here's Nick Caserio on Texans All Access last week with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. For this Thursday, sitting back, watching the first round, what's that going to be like?
I mean, we'll still kind of go through our process. So there's probably 15 or 20 players that you know are going to go. And then if you get to a point, you know, if there's an opportunity that you feel makes sense that you want to get back into the first round, then we'd have to weigh the cost benefits of potentially doing that. But I think it goes back to just knowing as many players as possible, kind of a range of, you know, where you think they may fall. And it's just relying on the information that you have. And there's a myriad of mocks that are available. Some are probably a little bit more accurate than others. But again, you're really just kind of adjusting and reacting to what's going on and kind of taking inventory. And then you're looking ahead to Friday if we don't pick on Thursday, which right now we're not scheduled to. But by the same token, if you get to a point where you feel like there's a player maybe that's standing out and you think that it's worth making the move, then if we were to do that, what's the cost associated with that? So we're in a decent position. You know, if we don't do anything, we're hopeful that we'll get, you know, two or three quality players on Friday. If we do have an opportunity on Thursday that makes sense, it'd be something for us to consider and discuss and ultimately just try to make the right decision at the present time.
I would bet there's a 90% chance that they're going to stay in round two, that they're not going to move into round one. I think part of doing that deal with Minnesota Certainly part of it was getting that extra two so you could go get an impact player, and they accomplished that by trading for Stephon Diggs. I think when you make a move like that, you got to be totally comfortable with what could be there at 42. It's not automatic you can move back into the first round. Teams like having first round picks for a reason. You get that extra fifth year option, and that's a hot spot too, the back end of the first round for teams looking to get back in. Nick doesn't strike me as somebody who's going to want to maybe overpay for the right to do that for a fifth year down the road.
Like, that trade made sense by the trade value chart to move back, and yet it doesn't work out that way on draft weekend necessarily. You can't just say, but I've got receipts. Can I just get back up there for the same price that I went?
Right.
Yeah. If there were guys that they were genuinely excited about, and I think there might be, obviously, a couple guys that they'd be interested in if they fall, but I think the guys that they felt best about are probably all projected to be in the top 15. And then after that, they don't feel so strongly about a group of guys. You know, Nick cares about bands and everything. Yes. You move back into the second round, and I think, frankly, like, I think he probably looks at defensive tackles, for instance, as a position that there's going to be a band of those guys in the second round that are all kind of the same. And that you don't, like, without falling in love too deeply with any one of them, you might feel good ending up with any one of three or four of them.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
He mentions, you know, the whole thing about 15 to 20 guys. There's 15 to 20 guys. Like, that's what most teams have first round. They don't have first round grades on 32 guys every year. They've got 15 to 20 guys they think are worth a first round pick. My guess is if it's one of those guys that's starting to slip, that's where the conversations start to take place. But if it's anybody outside of those guys they feel has a first round grade, then that's where you start. Yeah, that's where you start to get into the groups and the bands of players. And I think I could see them moving up from 42 to like 37 to ensure they get a guy, you know, like they did last year with Juice Scruggs. They moved up from 68 to 62 because they, you know, and they gave up a sixth and a seventh round pick to do that. Tank Dell, they moved up four spots to go get Tank Dell from 73 to 69, and they traded a fifth and a sixth to go do that. He, being Nick, views those day three picks as pocket change, you know, as currency, but it's tip money. You know, and basically for the right to move up 4, 6, 10 spots, I'm willing to forego the 195th and 213th player in this draft because I feel like Tank Dell has a chance to be a really, really good football player. I think Juice Scruggs has a chance to be a really, really good football player. And the fact of the matter is you can get fifth and sixth round picks back. That's the easier thing to do is get picks like that back than it is to move up 10 spots up to the 29th pick in the draft and move back into the first round. He got a fifth and a sixth back in the Stephon Diggs trade. You know what I mean? Just like as a throw-in with Diggs.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, right. And they're not throw-ins, though. I mean, they make the value work out. Like, that ended up being the trade for Diggs. The way it all calculates out, it works out to like a late second or early third rounder. Yeah. And whenever I say that, people get up in arms because the same fan base that last year was hearing from everybody that the Texans were going to have the worst record in the league and the draft pick was going to be so valuable. People are just damn right assured that the Vikings are going to have the worst pick available next year. So,
yeah.
Or the best pick available next year.
Yep. My advice to people going to the draft party on Friday would be have fun, be safe, and keep your head on a swivel when it comes to keeping an eye on the big screen, because in day two, which is the second and third round, Nick Caserio's history says he is going to maneuver to go get guys. He's made 7 day two picks since becoming the GM. 2 in 2021, 2 in 20, or 3 in 2022, and then 2 more last year. The only 2 players of those 7 that he picked with picks that the Texans had going into draft night that night are Davis Mills in 2021, and then Jalen Petrie in 2022. All 5 of the other ones were moves up the board to go get guys. They moved up 20 spots to get Nico Collins in 2021. They gave up a fifth and a fourth. They moved up 24 spots to get John Mechie. They gave up a couple of fourths in 2022. They moved up just five spots to go get Christian Harris. They duked a fifth-round pick, I think, to Denver. And then last year, as we pointed out, Juice Scruggs moved up. They moved up six spots to get Scruggs. They moved up four spots to get Tank Dell, giving a couple of day three picks in each of those trades. So they've moved up in the second and third round to get five of the seven guys that they've drafted. And I would say, I always say, Seth, when you move up to go get a guy, I know that, as you pointed out, when Nick's moving up to go get somebody, that it's usually not just that guy they're going to get. It could be Nico. Yeah. It could be this guy or that guy or another guy. Still, when you're moving up, you are giving up draft capital because you feel your evaluation, at least of that group of players, is accurate enough to forego some draft capital. So when you move up to go get guys, I always feel like those are the ones that probably need to work out. Like, I feel like 20% stronger, those need to work out than the ones where you just stay put and whoever falls to you falls to you, because you're making a move to go get somebody. The five guys they moved up to go get, I would say they've done a pretty good job with that in rounds two and three. Nico Collins looks like a Pro Bowler. John Mechie is probably the one that has the most question marks. Christian Harris is an ascending linebacker. Juice Scruggs, I think, did some decent things his rookie year. We'll see how he does if he's the full-time center. And Tank Dell was an incredible pick at pick 69 if he can stay healthy. So I would say they've done, you know, that strategy in day two has paid off pretty well for them in these three drafts.
Yeah, I think so, on day two.
Yeah.
You know, did you do the day three stuff? The Garrett Wallows and the
No, just day two. Day two.
Which might end up being the sweet spot. Not that I'm going to, you know, I don't get overly concerned about it. It just turns into more and more of a crapshoot when you get into the fourth round and later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that we discussed that last week. The third round picks used to be kind of a sore spot for the Texans. There were a lot of wasted third round picks on guys that had upside but had some kind of an issue or what have you. I think whereas previously there were times where it seemed like the Texans would take guys in the third round who were physically gifted, but their one flaw was that you're not sure if they actually enjoyed football or not.
Yes.
Whereas with Nick, okay, whatever the flaw is, it certainly isn't that these guys don't like football. That, you know, like, there's reasons they're going in the third round. Maybe it's not ideal size. Maybe it's a injury history, whatever it might be. But you get the sense that all these guys are very much football junkies.
Oh,
at least.
Yeah.
And that goes a long, long way in overcoming a lot of the other physical stuff.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we roll on here on a Monday. Good to have you with us. I would say, if I'm a brand new head coach in the NFL, if I'm a first-time head coach, especially the youngest head coach in the NFL, I don't know that I would necessarily channel things that Bill O'Brien was doing here in Houston when he arrived in Houston. This particular head coach, I wait to hear what he's doing and what team he's doing it with. You'll hear about it coming up next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.